Today, we'll talk with people who fought the Taliban and with people who've tried to understand them, like journalist Anand Gopal. In 2008, he set out for Afghanistan with no translator, no fixer, and one simple question. Who are the Taliban? He talked his way into the insurgency, getting to know militants, civilians, and warlords. And in his new book, No Good Men Among the Living, he says one of the most difficult things about dealing with the Taliban is that the difference between friend and foe is not always clear. He told Steve Paulson what it was like talking with the Taliban.
Most of the people I had met had actually never met a foreigner before, especially had never met an American before. So it was a very intriguing experience for them. And very often, I was the first person ever to ask them their life story. Once they knew that it was about finding out their stories, a lot of them opened up.
What was it like during those few weeks with the Taliban?
One thing that struck me is the Taliban are remarkably unsophisticated fighters. They wear sandals and they have rocket launchers on their shoulders, and that's about it. They had a lot of bungled attacks. They had very poor intelligence. And it was astonishing to me that despite all of that, that the U.S. was not able to defeat them.
Did they ask you about the United States?
Yeah, in fact, one of the first times I met the Taliban was up in a mountain in central Afghanistan, and I was going through my questioning, the usual sorts of things such as, you know, why do you fight? What kind of government do you want to see? And the Taliban commander stopped me at one point and started asking me questions about American life because, of course, he had never met an American before. He was interested in things like, why did President Obama want to send more troops to Afghanistan? What did the U.S. want out of this war? In fact, most of them had never even heard of 9/11.
In 2008, they had never heard of 9/11.
No, they had never heard of 9/11. In fact, most Taliban that I've met have a very foggy idea of 9/11. They don't understand what actually happened. Many of them, in fact, were only 10 or 11 years old when the attacks took place. But a lot of these guys are fighting for very local reasons, you know, for grudges, rivalries that are taking place in their village or in their valley. So they have very little concern for things that are happening around the world.
So it must be totally mysterious why the United States would even have soldiers there.
It's a mystery, and because of that, you get all sorts of conspiracy theories. You know, there's one popular conspiracy theory in Afghanistan, even among some Taliban, is that the United States secretly supports the Taliban. And they say this only because they don't understand how is it that the world's greatest superpower could come to the country and, in their view, screw things up to the point where the Taliban are strong. And so people concoct all sorts of theories to fit the facts.
When you say they say the United States has screwed things up there, what do you mean?
Well, for example, and particularly in the early years, a lot of innocent Afghans, tribal elders, and people who were pro-American or pro-Karzai government ended up getting killed or getting arrested. And the reason for that is because the U.S. had been allying with various warlords. And so whoever the warlords wanted to have eliminated, the U.S. would eliminate them based on this false intelligence.
What you're describing then is this sort of incredibly complicated situation the United States went into, and it wasn't always clear who was on whose side?
It was incredibly complicated, but that wasn't the way we thought about it at the time, right? Because if you remember what President Bush was saying is that you're either with us or against us. And so at the time, in terms of policy, basically the world and Afghanistan was divided into two camps, which was the terrorists and the non-terrorists. But when you look at the situation on the ground, it's a lot more fluid and a lot more complicated. For example, there are Taliban who had tried to switch sides. There are warlords who we were allied with who are actually using the U.S. for their own ends. You know, let's say you had a piece of land and I wanted that land and I was a warlord. I could tell the U.S. military that you are a member of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. And with very little other intelligence to go by, you would be arrested and sent away.
So you're saying it was more complicated than just the Taliban on one side and, say, the Karzai government on the other side?
No, it's much more complicated. In fact, I would say there's not two sides in this war. There are many, many different sides, and they're always changing. For instance, a lot of the Taliban fighters in 2001, after the U.S. invasion, tried to switch and join the Karzai government. Some of them had tribal links to the Karzai government. Others just were doing it out of sheer survival. And so you had a situation in 2002 when there essentially were no Taliban on the ground. They had all went back to their homes, or they were trying to join the U.S.-backed government. But still, they were targeted in part because of these warlords. So what ended up happening is a lot of these guys went and started fighting again. And then you have warlords who technically or nominally were on the U.S. side. But as I said, they were using the U.S. for their own ends. And so it's unclear who the good guys are, who the bad guys are.
So you're saying that the United States made a huge blunder not too long after 9/11 by launching this war in Afghanistan and basically sort of saying all the Taliban are evil.
Oh, that's right. And, you know, even the way of thinking about it is certain people are evil or certain people are good really doesn't square with the reality on the ground where people shift sides. You know, when the Soviet Union left in the 1980s, a lot of those Afghans who had called themselves communists all of a sudden switched sides and called themselves Islamic revolutionaries. And they did this because when you're in a country that's been at war for 3 decades, you're going to do what you have to do to survive. And that's been going on again and again in Afghanistan over the last 10 years, but that's a reality that we've missed.
Now, of course, there are huge policy questions about the Taliban, especially in light of the controversy over the release of Sergeant Bergdahl. Could our dealings with the Taliban, with Afghanistan generally, gone much differently?
Yeah, I think so. And if you look at the 5 that were swapped for Bergdahl, I think that's instructive because, in fact, all 5 were captured and sent to Guantanamo when they were in the process of cutting deals with pro-U.S. forces. Just to give an example of one of them, he was a former interior minister for the Taliban, and he was also a fellow tribesman of Hamid Karzai. And so he actually had reached out to the Karzai family shortly after the U.S. Invasion and tried to arrange a deal where he would switch sides, basically defect to the Karzai government. And so he had set up a meeting for that reason, and he was captured while going to that meeting, and he was sent to Guantanamo. Another one of the 5 actually worked for the CIA before he was captured and sent to Guantanamo.
This is not the story that we've been hearing about these 5 guys in Guantanamo all these years.
It's not. It's not the story we've been hearing about the Taliban or Afghanistan in general. I think this is, and it was surprising to me, I only found out about these things after going through the countryside and getting the stories that turned out to be very different from the way I had thought of things and we tend to think about the conflict.
Are you saying we still don't really know who our enemies are in Afghanistan?
No, we don't. In fact, I just heard earlier today that John McCain was saying that the 5 Taliban who were captured are responsible for the 9/11 attacks, which is pretty preposterous, actually, because Osama bin Laden was responsible for the 9/11 attacks. And these 5 had nothing to do with it. In fact, some of them had never even heard of al-Qaeda until 2001. So we have to get our facts straight, and I think that'll go a long way towards finding ways to end the conflict.
So are you saying that years ago there was a chance the United States could have struck a deal with the Taliban? I mean, basically, this whole war could have been avoided?
Well, yeah, the Taliban were ready for that deal because they were beat. They had their backs against the walls. So everybody from the rank and file all the way up to the senior leadership had tried to cut deals. And one by one, those deals were overturned in 2002. The tragedy is that now the Taliban are very strong and they have less incentive to a deal than they did back in 2002.
I mean, there is the stigma that that the United States should not be negotiating with the enemy. There shouldn't be any dealings with the Taliban. You're saying that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this is how wars end. Wars end by negotiating with the enemy or by total victory. Total victory is not on offer here. We've been in war for 13 or 14 years and we haven't gotten to total victory. It's unlikely that the next 13 or 14 years is going to offer anything much different than the previous decade. And so we have to look seriously at a negotiated settlement. I think that's the only way to get out of a war that otherwise doesn't seem to end.
So given the politics of the moment right now, I mean, the Taliban has been resurgent. There have been elections recently in Afghanistan. The United States has said that it will pull its troops out over the next year or so. What's the United States standing in Afghanistan right now?
If you go to the deep south, to the countryside where I had been recently, the U.S. is incredibly unpopular among rural villagers who've basically been squeezed between the Taliban on the one side and pro-U.S. warlords on the other side. So the U.S. is leaving in place, though, thousands of those warlords and tens of thousands of private security contractors who are mostly Afghan on the one hand, and the Taliban are still strong. They aren't going anywhere on the other hand. So it doesn't seem like there's going to be any end in sight to this war.
Can you imagine a scenario where the United States would be seen not as the enemy by lots of people in Afghanistan? I mean, actually just be seen as helpful?
Well, certainly. And in fact, we had that scenario back in 2001 because people were thrilled that the Taliban were overthrown. And there was a lot of hope that people wanted the U.S. engagement in the country. I think the first step has to be that the U.S. has to privilege the rule of law and human rights over short-term security counterterrorism. To do that means severing ties with various rapacious warlords, like the one that I profiled in my book, who are in many ways responsible for the resurgence of the Taliban. You know, they are going and killing people in the countryside, and then their family members are going and joining the Taliban in retaliation. And this is sort of an unending cycle of violence that we are in the center of. So, you know, cutting off funding for those kinds of forces would actually do a lot to ingratiate ourselves with the Afghan people.
So what about for you? I mean, here you've spent the last half decade in Afghanistan. You've just written this book. Will Afghanistan always be with you?
It'll always be with me because, you know, it's hard. Once you go there and meet the people and experience the hospitality and also see the tremendous amount of heroism that they display by dealing with the various forces over the last 30 years, you know, it makes a mark on you and it's very difficult to leave.
Anand Gopal is the author of No Good Men Among the Living, America, the Taliban, and the War Through Afghan Eyes. What do you think about the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and our decade-long battle against the Taliban? And share your thoughts on our Facebook page.